Hey, mate.
Hey, man. You all right?
Yeah, I'm good. Why?
Pod?
You're away this week.
Are you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you said that to us, didn't you?
Yes, very clearly said that. I was away this week.
That explains everything. We just recorded without you. Sorry.
Enjoy being away then. Bye, mate.
Where are you? Thanks. See you later. Bye.
Brings you
the next city.
Go.
Your
agenda.
Cam's not coming.
Did he reply? No.
Well,
you didn't message him.
I wrote it.
Didn't send it.
Let's just start there. Thank you for listening to This is Phoenix City.
Hi.
Are we renaming the podcast?
I forgot what.
This is Phoenix City.
This is Phoenix City. We need like some awesome sting intros. Boom. From like proper like radio everything. I don't know.
What does it even mean?
I don't know, like Piney, basically.
You want stings from Piney?
Yeah.
No, they're going to be cheesy Vice City style.
Yeah.
Stings.
Oh yeah.
That's
okay. Yeah. Give us an example. Yeah.
Oh, just the
look of horror on your face.
Yeah, I know. I was just trying to think because I haven't played Vice City in about 15 years. So,
coming up on Phoenix City, will Mark Rudan be around next season? I don't know. No,
this is the worst.
No.
I don't know.
Just some nice cheesy ads for car dealers.
Yeah. Dave's here.
I am.
Frosty's here.
I am.
I had this whole bit ready where I was going to call you David, Cameron, and Andrew. And Cam's not here, so it kind of ruined that. It's not quite as effective with just the two of you here. But anyway, that's probably as good as this podcast is going to get. So
thank you, Patrick.
You may as well just turn off now, everybody. We're here to talk about football.
Tell us what you thought of the game.
The 1-0 loss to Sydney FC I didn't really see much from the team during the game.
Would it be fair to say that's because you didn't watch the game?
That'd be entirely fair to say that I didn't watch the game.
I was just waiting for how many metaphors you could throw in there that just skirted around. It's like, I didn't see it.
Oh yeah, I was searching for another one. Dave came in and cut me off, so it's fine. I did not see the game. I was busy on Saturday night, so Dave and Frosty, you can lead this conversation. Off you go.
Yeah, it'll be a very short one, I think.
Yeah. I don't know,
I think there's a lot to talk about.
Was it good? Was it a good game despite the result?
Not really.
Yeah?
I didn't think it was that flash.
No.
It felt like we were going to lose that game. It was just a question of how. But it there was enough in that you kind of like, you know, maybe we nick it somehow, but yeah. I couldn't tell how.
It didn't feel like we were going to win, but it did feel a bit like a draw would have been a reasonably fair result. I'm sure Sydney fans will say, oh no, we shaded that and deserved the win fully. And they might be right, but I think there was enough in this that if a draw had been how it ended, no one would have gone away particularly unhappy with that. But we never looked like we were going to win it. We struggled in a few key elements of the game. Like we were trying to be composed on the ball, but instead they were rushing us constantly. And I was talking about it with, I can't even remember who I was sitting in the pub with, but whoever I was sitting in the pub with while watching this, I said to them, look, they've adjusted quicker to where the threshold on a foul is. And the threshold was much higher than a lot of refs might let go.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, I'll talk about some elements of refereeing that I didn't like about the game, but I don't think having that slightly higher threshold for a foul is necessarily a problem. So long as you all adjust to that and go just a little nip from behind is not going to get you a free kick. And that's just the standard. He was reasonably consistent on that, in that little nibbles and things that some referees would have called all game were not called at all.
Shane Smelt's tackling technique.
Yeah, and so they were much better at that. And so they, every time we were on the ball, were pressuring us and coming in and having those little nibbles, and we were giving it away pretty much every time. Whereas when they had the ball, we weren't doing the same. We weren't getting in their face and being physical about it at all. we were standing off and they had a lot of time to play with the ball. And so, I mean, every time we had it, we're under pressure. Every time they had it, no pressure at all. And that took a toll over 90 minutes.
Yeah, it felt similar. Was it the Victory game that first 30 minutes where in the midfield there was just those turnovers, just like – But although there was a lot more pressure in this game, at least the Melbourne, the Victory game was just like they were just turning it over anyway. Yeah.
And there were a few of those in this game as well where we just made bad passes. But I think the pressure was getting to them and causing that.
Yeah, yeah. It did feel a bit rushed and a bit – there wasn't a tremendous amount of composure right through the whole – it certainly the first half just felt – I don't know how to describe it. It was just –
The lack of composure is right. That's what was there.
And for two teams that have, you know, are in the firmly in the top six and have shown that they can play football and have been fairly consistent about it, it seemed really weird. Because it didn't feel like it was a tactical battle either. It didn't feel like you know, Rudan got one over Corica the first time, Corica got one over Rudan the second time, and then this was kind of like they didn't even try and get one over each other. It was just kind of like, oh, let's see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. You look like you've loaded up some stats.
Do you want some stats? I can give you some stats.
I want to talk first, before we go stats, about the one thing I didn't like about the refereeing performance that I thought was very inconsistent was the yellow cards. I thought there was a lot of confusion around what was and wasn't a yellow card. I think the foul threshold was a bit higher than usual, but some very soft yellows were given to us in particular, and some dead set yellows just not given to them. Like, I think Lowry has a good shout for what the hell was his even for. He falls over near a player and gets given a yellow card for it. Like, it's just not, it's barely even a challenge, let alone a yellow card challenge. Whereas, you know, quite attacking play from us and one of their defenders runs across the back of our ankles, calls the foul, doesn't give the yellow. And you're like, but he's through there. That's just bizarre. And then they had the one where, their player, I can't remember who it was through into the box and we come back to give a yellow card on, I want to say it was Louis, maybe, for pushing Fornaroli in back play?
It won't be Fornaroli because he doesn't play for the team.
Oh, sorry.
It also won't be Louis because it's either Ryan Lowry.
Brosk's who I'm thinking of.
Alex Rufer, maybe?
Could have been Rufer. Yeah.
The 3 years we have a Duro, Lowry, and Rufer.
Okay, it's the Rufer one then, I think. Where, in back play, like, he's played a beautiful through ball to another attacker who's through, he's in the box. He's admittedly quite wide, but he's about to cross across to the spot, basically, and see what happens. And the ref blows it up and drags us back to almost halfway for a yellow card on a little bit of nudge off the ball on Brosk. And you're like, that's just bizarre. And they were furious about it. They're like, but we're up here. And it was just strange. It didn't need to stop. You could have let that play on and still given the yellow card.
That sounds like it was the first one, the through ball that Jura bobbled and then just took one of their guys out.
But no, I don't think it's that one.
Okay. Because he definitely did the same thing. He lost the ball, and after the guy put the Sydney player put the ball through, he had a little nibble.
Nah, this was two players running shoulder to shoulder.
Oh, okay,
quite late in the game. I think it'll be the Rufer one.
Yeah, it'd have to be.
But yeah, it's been a few days. My picturing of the incident is reasonably clear, but whose faces they are, I can't remember.
Shot count. If we're going to do some stats now, Shot count was 13 shots for us, 15 to Sydney. So fairly even.
Yep, on target. Probably similar-ish as well.
Don't give me that in this app.
One is 4-3 to Sydney.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so similar as well.
Yeah. We made similar numbers of passes.
I'd imagine possession will be different. Possession, that'll be where there's a bit of a skew.
What would you think the skew would be?
Probably not as bad as 60-40, but it felt like that.
To Sydney?
Yeah.
It's actually 53% Phoenix.
Wow.
So that kind of shows you what the Phoenix were doing with the ball. I mean, it didn't
like very
game,
little.
Yeah.
It felt like every time we got it, we gave it straight back to them. And they had a much, much longer on the ball.
And we have done that relatively often this season where we have just passed it around the back and tried to play it forward and it's not working and that kind of thing. It's the Brisbane Roar when Brisbane Roar couldn't score type thing back when they were very, very good. So I don't know if that was the case here because I didn't see it, but I can see how we would shade position but feel like we didn't.
Yeah, I would think a lot of that possession must be in our own half.
Yeah.
Are we going to address the elephant in the room?
The goal?
Well, no, Stephen Taylor. It feels like when he doesn't
play. He's got big guns, but he's not an elephant.
Well,
boom, 2-1 night from me. There we go.
You can go home now.
Yeah, I'll eat my Danish quietly to celebrate.
Turn your mic off. Yeah, it just felt like that Perth game, one that he missed. Soulless performance, and then this game again, soulless performance. I don't know whether that, you know, because we were obviously having to Kopczynski, Dura, and Fox across the back, and that's
and Fox went off injured as well. So.
Yeah, true. So Lowry came on,
yep.
And so we're down to, you know, our third, fourth choice.
Yep.
Centre back. So, you know, you got to question whether you're going to be able to play out from the back if with those guys, because I don't think that Fox and Lowry are particularly adept on the ball.
No.
Well, that's not what they're there for.
Well, if you're going to play three at the back, you've got to have someone who can play out. And Kopczynski, I think, can, but playing out at left centre, it's very easy to get him isolated or get Kakache isolated further up if you can force him out to play up the line.
Yeah,
I think that's a tactic. Who was it? Someone used against us earlier in the year and really kind of got us a bit screwed.
The FC.
Was it Sydney?
They won
here. Oh, yeah, the one over here. Yeah, that's right. They pushed very inside out.
Yeah. The other notable thing about the back line as well was that Dura didn't look good. He had a very poor game. Now, whether that's we've talked about how good Taylor's been making him look, that partnership clearly works really well. Whether it was just Dura having a bad game or whether he just was a bit lost without Taylor there, I don't know, but he definitely had a bad game. And the whole back line looked a bit disorganized because of it, because you needed someone kind of leading it, and Dura was not having a good night and certainly wasn't directing the line and keeping things in control, because he was just scrambling to sort himself
that's
out.
That's not been Dura this year anyway.
No, exactly.
Because he's been playing that kind of sweeper role, sitting in behind, whereas Taylor's been kind of...
It's not been Dura for 2 or 3 years, which is the problem. Like, you look at the all-white performances where Winston Reid and Tommy Smith haven't been around, and Dura's been the one that's had to lead their back line, and he can't do it. He has passed that. And he has passed being able to grab a team by the scruff of the neck. Stephen Taylor has not passed it by all means, I think.
No. I don't think it's an age thing. Oh, you know,
I don't think it's an
aging perspective.
I don't think it's an aging thing. I think it's an ability thing.
Yes, and no.
He no longer has the ability to put in that solid performance week in, week out, cover other people, do his job fine, and Stephen Taylor's able to do that.
Well, I think that the way his style has evolved as he's gotten a bit older is he's dropped deeper and he's kind of played that almost a sweeper role. So, which is really good, because Taylor's able to marshal the defence and Dura's able to drop him behind. But the problem is that Dura's not able to play up a bit higher because he can't get up and back and cover. And I just don't think that, you know, he's capable of doing that. Whereas Taylor up there, he's able to marshal the defence. He's able to get Kopczynski in a bit deeper to cover the centre back, while Dura kind of swings in behind, you know, left centre and right centre, just to make sure that nothing drips in behind. You know, it means that our wing backs can play higher up.
Yeah.
And everything kind of works in there if there's a centre back who's able to kind of get everyone organised.
Well, I think there's, like, while I agree, I don't think it's specifically an age thing. I think age is a factor here, because it's another thing he's got to think about. When you're tired and you're puffing, you don't have that same youth and fitness you used to have. There's more things going on in your head. It's not, you don't have as much time to be focused on organizing everyone else, because actually sometimes you're just needing a moment to catch your breath, or, you know, there's a few other things you're having to dedicate your brain space to, as well as organizing them. Whereas when he was a bit younger, you know, he had a bit more freedom to do that, because he wasn't having to focus on those other things. And I think you can see that with Taylor and his fitness, so much of it, he can be screaming at people getting in position because he's not out of breath, you know. That kind of stuff is a factor, but I don't think it's the main problem there. I just think he's a bit out of practice of leading a line like that, because he hasn't really done it in a long time. And then he had a pretty inexperienced back line with him, particularly once he lost Fox as well. I mean, already it was inexperienced. Now you've got, as you say, gone down to your third or fourth choice. And, you know, it actually got a bit better for a while there, but it didn't look like the well-oiled machine we have seen at various points this season.
Yeah, I mean, for me, if you're playing centre-back, you have to be, first and foremost, a strong communicator. I mean, Ziggy, was a physical specimen, but his communication skills may not have been subtle, but he was vocal on the field. Yep. You were under no illusion as to where he wanted you to be at any given point. he might have been going red in the face and calling you names that you probably don't want to mention in public, but you knew where you wanted to be. And I don't think Fox or Kopchinski are those guys. And that's something that I think that, you know, if Fox wants a long-term career, that's something he's going to have to learn. Kopchinski, well, you've got to come and break. He is second language. So, you know, who knows what language he footballs in.
Is that a term you can use? What language do you football in?
Well, I mean, I
football in Russian, personally.
So. Well, I when you're, as Dave was saying, when you're puffing and struggling, it's like having to then think about how do I say this in English?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I mean, you can get a lot across with the sentiment, right? If you point at someone and you're yelling and you're screaming at them and they're probably out of position, right? No matter what you say at them. But Did this game feel like that's just where the Phoenix are at the moment, or did it feel like it was a poor Phoenix performance?
It felt like this was a game that was at the end of a long run. It felt tired and it really needed someone, maybe not take it by the scruff of the neck, but certainly to take ownership of it and be very organised and, you know, the way Taylor does at the back, but you also need someone further up the field to take ownership and say, say a Krishna, we've seen him occasionally just go one particular game, go, right, I'm dropping deep this entire game and I'm going to get on the damn ball and I'm going to do something. Singh's done it a little more erratically and we needed someone to do it at the front end and at the back end, and we didn't have anyone doing it at the back end, and at the front end it didn't look like there was anyone saying, hey, follow me, let me show you the way. And that's, unfortunately, that's Singh all over, and we can't expect Krishna or Williams to do it as much because they are so much more advanced up the field. And unfortunately, Rufa and Mundy are not the sorts of guys who are able to, even though they're the sorts of guys that will get on the ball and be facing forward, they're not the ones to kind of dictate that passing game, you know, a PLO-style player.
Dave, do you think it was reflective?
I think it was an interesting one because I think you said before it was a bit of a soulless game, and I think that kind of was the problem, that there didn't feel like there was a real drive to we need 3 points off Sydney here. You know, it feels a bit like we're locked into the six and the pressure's off a little, and Sydney are a hard team to play, especially over in Sydney. I mean, home game, we can talk about that later, but, you know, it's a game over in Sydney against a hard-to-beat side. And it's not one we need points out of, really. It's not the one you're targeting, at least. Yep. It felt a bit like that. It felt a bit like, oh, if we get something here, that'd be nice. But, oh, we're down by one. Oh, well, we'll see it out and make sure it's not two kind of thing. And so it didn't feel like there was really anyone out there trying to drive to drag that back to a draw and then push for a win. It didn't feel like that at the end there. It just felt like, oh, well, that's how that's gone.
It felt like they were just kind of basically try and stick in it without taking any risks.
Whereas I think if this had been against the Mariners or the Jets even, who are, you know, coming up behind, I think there would have been a bit more passion of, no, we can't drop these points. I think against Sydney, though, there just didn't feel to be that same kind of impetus to save it, I guess.
I guess we did that against Perth as well, but it made a little bit more sense then because Perth are head and shoulders above anybody else, including Victoria and Sydney.
Yeah.
But against Sydney FC, when we've already beaten them once in Sydney this season.
Yeah, but we're down a few on numbers and that kind of stuff. I think
who are we down? Stephen Taylor.
Yeah, which
that's
is
one. That's one.
Well, and Fox is out injured, and so, you know, you had some changes there. It didn't feel like an A side, and it didn't feel like a game we really had.
That's an interesting one.
Had tried to get up for, I guess,
because it essentially was the A side with the exception of one player.
But
because that was
player
one player,
then went out. So yeah, I mean, it's not even like you would have. Yeah. Lowry wouldn't have had any practice at all.
It's one player, but then we also replaced that same one player. It's not like we replaced Kopchinski. It was just one player that was different to our first strength team.
Yep.
So why did it feel like it wasn't the A team? Well, that's an interesting one for me because it essentially was. Is it just a mentality thing? We weren't playing like we wanted to win this one.
Well, I think we lost that emotional component with losing Taylor, but then they would have practiced a week with Fox, and then it's like, well, we lost Fox and now we're playing with a guy that we don't practice with at all. And so that's going to feel a little
weird. You'd hope they do practice with him.
Well, you know, but, do practice. Yeah. But he's not in that training squad. Yeah. He'd probably be, you know, red shirt for, you know, the first. Yeah. So,
but no, I definitely think this felt like, as you say, kind of the end of a long run of good performances. We're bound to have a small slump. Like you can't keep that intensity up all the time. This felt like a slight dip in that. If we see that continuing, I think I'd be worried. As it was, though, it wasn't a horrendous performance. There were some individually bad performances, but Sydney put us under a lot of pressure, and we didn't rise to the pressure.
Who did you think had a bad game?
Jura.
Oh, yes. Yeah, Jura, definitely. But apart from that, there were a whole lot of 5 out of 10s for me. That's all.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, that's what I mean. Jura absolutely had a bad game, and there were a lot of reasonably average performances. It didn't feel like people getting up and sticking their hand up and going, no, we want this one.
Interesting. Let's talk about the pen itself.
Yeah.
Pen, no pen?
Pen.
Dead
cool.
Set.
Easy. Yeah.
But he shouldn't have gone for him. That Brosk was never getting that ball.
No. Oh, well, nah, Brosk was going to get a touch on it and does get a touch on it.
But
he's going wider. I think I don't mind this so much. And I'm going to say.
Really?
Yeah, as a keeper, I don't mind it. Because Curto so many times has been stitched up in front of him by a defender coming in and making that soft challenge. At least this one, he's put on himself. He's made a decision. And the number of times we've seen him this season make a decision to come out and he smothers what should be a dead set goal. I don't mind him coming out here.
There was one at the beginning of the game too.
Yeah, exactly. It just happens this one went badly. But across the season, we haven't seen him screw up many of these. This one he did, but I don't want to say to him, no, I don't want you coming out there, because we've seen him come out and make saves he had no right to make.
Yeah.
Oh. And this one, he came out, didn't make the save. He ends up dragging him down. It's a pen, but at least that's on him. And, you know, he backs himself to save a pen. And that's your right as a keeper, I guess. Whereas when it's defenders making those bad tackles in front of him, he doesn't even give it a chance at it. That feels rough. This one, I'll give him a pass on.
Especially when he's head and shoulders the best player on the team at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So 100% his fault, but I think he's allowed to make a mistake.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
he's due one given how many absolute blinders he's had.
Yeah, I mean, this is what his second mistake.
Yeah. There was a stat, I can't remember where it came from. It was Opta put out a thing of expected goals versus what you've actually conceded in terms of shots that were saved rather than shots that were deflected, all that kind of thing. And Curto comes out with a +8.
Yep.
He saved 8 more goals than he should have. Most other goalkeepers in the league are down in the 3-2-1s.
Yeah,
some of them are -1, -2, -3.
Even Lawrence Thomas was +6.
They're the top two.
Yeah. Which is incredible.
And Ollie Sale makes the list of the top, was it 7 or 8?
Yeah.
Yeah.
With 0.
Yeah.
To have your reserve keeper and your main keeper appearing that high on the list is excellent, and he tops it comfortably.
Or is it that the other keepers are absolute garbage?
But in the past, we've had those goalkeepers.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
We've had a different Ollie Sale who has let them in, or we've had Taniana, who I'm not going to talk about. But he's been so effective at saving 8 goals, we'll give him 1 penalty.
Yeah.
And he picked the penalty as well. He just couldn't save it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a beautiful pen. To pick it and just stand there, that's a ballsy call. That is, but unfortunately, Lafondre freaking buried it.
That's how you score a pen. Roy needs to watch that and learn, because that's how you.
No, Roy shouldn't be taking
that. Roy can watch that, but not ever use that in a game.
No, but he could learn, and he can work at it in the off season, and we'll see from there.
Well, no, if Roy is going to shoot that way, apart from pens, I'm okay with that, because if he's shooting from there,
that's how he scored the goal in Auckland, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if Roy took pens like that, I'd be happy for him to take pens.
Oh, yeah.
If he
could score penalties, we'd all be happy for that.
He just doesn't. all right, let's talk about the home game in Sydney then and how that went as a concept, because
badly.
Mark Rudan has thoughts about this.
He has trademark. He has words as well.
Oh, yeah.
And emotions.
Yeah, do we want to talk Rudan, or do we want to talk about the...
Let's talk our feelings about it first.
Yeah.
5,000 people there.
Of which 4,000 were Sydney fans.
I mean, 4,900 probably. I mean, it did the job. It was a game that happened because a game couldn't be at Westpac, and the Phoenix didn't lose a shitload of money on it because they had someone underwriting it. From that perspective, it was fine. Well, we know enough of that we can make an assumption based on the fact that they couldn't find anybody to do it here. And instead of just biting the bullet and going somewhere like Christchurch, they went over to Sydney. There must be something enticing to Sydney.
So we know previously there had been discussions.
And we know that...
And that was last season.
Yeah. Domi has said in the past, I've read it in the past week or so, that he, or maybe it was an interview that he did with Vorman a month ago that Vorman re-put out this week, where he said Southwest Sydney are trying to prove themselves that they can host A-League games and test the facilities and that kind of thing. So if that is the impetus, surely they're coming up with something to bring it over there.
Well, you'd hope so. But I think in the discussions I've heard around this, they were sold on the idea that this would have a big crowd. I think there had been discussions previously about, you know, someone underwriting it or making a cash payment or that kind of stuff. I don't know that that ended up the situation here. I'm not convinced of that. I think this time around they were sold on the fact that this would help metrics. So I wonder if there wasn't, in fact, an underwrite. I don't know that for sure. Maybe there was, and I hope there was. But I think they'd been sold a yarn on the fact that this would be 10 to 12,000 people.
Exactly.
And that isn't what happened. It didn't get anywhere near that. And so if they were banking on that to make money or, you know, not have it be an abject loss, they might have been stitched up on all fronts here. And that's really bad all round. I hope that's not the case. But I just haven't seen – the language seemed to have shifted to me around, we're going to get a good crowd over there. It's going to be good for metrics as well as money. And this clearly wasn't good for metrics.
No.
And it certainly wouldn't have been good for money either.
Unless there was, in fact, still a cash payment or an underwriter, in those scenarios, it might have been okay cash-wise.
Yeah, but even so, you were expecting, you know, 10 to 15,000 because it's in Sydney. It's basically a Sydney home game. You're expecting a Sydney home crowd.
Well, that's the problem, is that it wasn't a Sydney home game. Like, it was...
It's close enough, mate. It's basically, it's not even, you know.
It does surprise me that the crowd was so small.
Yeah, me too, actually.
Admittedly, Campbelltown's a long way to go.
And you have to pay for a ticket.
Well, no, it's not 40 minutes.
Isn't it?
People are talking 40 minutes drive from Jubilee Stadium, which is 40 minutes south of the city. And this is 40 minutes in another direction. So you have to go out to Parramatta and then about 40 minutes south of there. So it's probably somewhere between an hour and a half from the city. I don't know the traffic. I only know the train network. But most people are likely to be taking the train. If they're going to Jubilee, that's how most people get there anyway. But you're talking from the central city, something in that sort of ballpark. And
so
that's
palmy.
Yeah. I do think if that was us and we had an away game that was only an hour and a half from us, we'd all go and we'd expect a decent number to.
Yeah,
particularly if there was public transport the whole way and it was easy to use. But only 5,000 in Sydney is a pretty small number. There must have been, like, that must have been a bridge too far for locals.
It's interesting. They probably target the games against the Mariners, for example. They do take up three or four whole bays worth of people, and it's the same distance, an hour and a half on the train to the Central Coast. So, yeah, I mean, if we try and build this as the Phoenix, we're trying something new because the options in New Zealand hadn't worked. And we are doing that in an off season after the worst season we've ever had in terms of performances and in terms of crowds away from home, it makes sense. If you look at it in the current context, if we got 23,000 to Auckland, that makes zero sense. But they're not; they didn't make a decision under those set of circumstances. I think Mark Rudan touches on it. We'll talk about his comments now. But Mark Rudan touches on that, and that he says that they didn't back me to be performing like this. Well, I'm like, well, you're not actually performing that well, mate. Get over yourself a little bit first, because we're not winning the league.
No problem. We are
sixth place and we are sliding towards seventh. So, first of all, secondly,
just for context around that, before we let that stand as fact, this is the first time we're in this sort of playoff position this time of the season in a long while.
Totally, but Mark Rudan,
we are sixth and reasonably comfortable in sixth.
Yeah, and we'll take that. That is literally the average you can be in the league.
Well, it's not average for us, though. This is a well above average.
But the way that he's talking, the way that he's talking is like we're second or third. And the way that I think the media narrative around him and some of the public perception of
him, I agree
him
with that,
is that he is the savior. He's not. He's done what we would expect the average coach in the league to be able to do, maybe slightly above average because of the Phoenix performances. But to say that they didn't back him, I don't think is the case at all. They went under circumstances of 3 years of playing games outside of Wellington and getting no more than 8,000 to venues that they should have got more. I don't blame them at all for taking this game to Sydney.
It's tough as well because there's some other factors in play as well that obviously we as long-standing fans are aware of that maybe Rudan's not quite so across, because we've tried games in places and it's gone badly, and that's burnt bridges with local councils and things who've underwritten games in the past, and it hasn't really delivered for them. So we no longer have the ability to do that with kind of council backing in some places. And so it really is the owners having to front this out of pocket, which while it might be fair to him to say, well, you should have backed me, they also have been told that before by numerous coaches. You know, last year with Kalisic, I'm sure the same things would have been said. Well, X, Y, Z, we should do this because you need to back me. They've had to make some calls. This is one they made. I think, obviously, history shows that it was not a good call, but I don't think they were wrong in making it necessarily. I think they might have had some bad information, but I don't know that this would have gone any better had we gone to, say, New Plymouth or Dunedin or wherever again. And, you know, there were some venues out. Super Rugby has started. It's not like every stadium in the country is available to us. And there is a lot of stuff on.
New Zealand Rugby is not going to let you play a game the day before a Super Rugby game.
We literally did in Auckland. We literally played a game there the day before a Super Rugby game.
Yeah.
So
that was specifically organised, though,
and
around that.
Eden Park, that's the reason why we went to Eden Park, is because they are desperate to get people in there.
They're in a weird situation. But I think there's also an element of... what was I going to say? I've lost it. No, it's gone.
I'll jump in. Now it makes a lot of sense to just play both of these two games that we had to play away from Wellington at Eden Park. And
maybe.
That would have been fine. It would have been fine. We wouldn't have got 23,000 to either of them, but we might have got 12 to 15 to both. But we couldn't do that under context of the previous seasons. We've got 10,000 to Eden Park, and at QBE we've got 5,000 the last two games that we played there. We couldn't do that. That's just not feasible. Eden Park wouldn't want that. Now, Eden Park absolutely would give us two games in a row because we can get 23,000. But context is everything and hindsight is everything here, where a lot of people are having a go at the Phoenix for not playing the game at fucking Trafalgar Park and Nelson because of course they're going to get a bigger crowd than Sydney. But that's with the benefit of hindsight. So, yeah, I'm okay with it. It could have gone better. It should have gone better. It didn't. The Phoenix will learn from it now. I mean...
To be honest, I'm kind of more on Mark Rudan's side here. You've got to, when you're running a football club, they know that, you know, that this is not a profit making enterprise. You've got to decide what your number one goal is. If it's not to lose money, probably best you don't invest in a football club. If it's to give the players and the management the best opportunity to win, You've got to give them the opportunity by playing home, playing partisan in front of partisan crowds.
You couldn't play at home.
They couldn't play in Wellington.
Oh no, in New Zealand.
But more importantly than that, right? The trade off with owning a football club is always going to be exactly what you're describing. There is a trade off between spending all of the money on every single thing the coach and, you know, the back office staff and whatever want, and not burning all of the pool of money you have. Like, that's the trade-off. And they, as owners, have been very clear about being financially responsible. And so I don't think we can really have a go at them for making a financially responsible decision, right? Like, they've tried the centres in New Zealand. I can't genuinely think of a centre they haven't tried yet. And they decided, weighing up all the options on whatever grounds were available, that they preferred this option with Sydney. Now, I really hope there was some money involved in that or something. Well, but I've remembered now what my thing I was going to say is. They also had claimed that none of the grounds were available. I think we can all agree
that's
bullshit. Yeah. That's just factually incorrect. There will have been some grounds available, but they will have been like second tier or third tier grounds.
And financially unsustainable.
Correct. And so I think that, you know, if Christchurch had been available or something, I think they would have done that. But all of the ones they obviously assessed that might have been worth keeping in New Zealand for weren't available. But I don't believe that it means every ground in New Zealand was unavailable. It means, you know, Hutt Rec was available, but they would have had to build a whole new stadium for just one game. It made sense the time we had to do it for three, doesn't make sense for one, you know, and that kind of stuff that they will have done the maths on and gone, we think this is the best option. They were wrong, but maybe it still was the best option.
Yeah, I look at a lot of those quote-unquote second-tier fields. You've got basically anyone that's playing NPC that isn't your super theme teams.
Yep.
There are venues all around the place. And I question whether, you know, one in Northland or Bay of Plenty or Rotorua even.
Rotorua, that
football venue there is amazing.
Yeah. The problem with those places is that the Phoenix have to fund the travel to those places. At least with the FFA will fund travel to main centres. I assume that with this game being in Sydney, FFA funded Phoenix to get to Sydney and not having to fund Sydney, rather than if it was here, they would have funded Sydney to come here. Yep. The moment it's in Bay of Plenty or Northland, the Phoenix have to fund the travel and fund all that extra cash that they need to put into getting someone there. The councils have done that in the past and help with that.
Which is something that basically if we don't know, the lay fan certainly doesn't know. And I think that transparency is the issue, is that they should have basically said, look, cards on the table. As soon as you're doing something, I mean, you don't need to be explicit, but certainly if you want to keep everyone on side, explaining why you're basically taking it into enemy territory is probably the minimum amount you've got to go.
Do they not do that in December when they announced?
I think it's always interesting hearing Phoenix fans in particular talk about a lack of transparency from the owners, because I think we're very lucky. I have met a lot of fans around the league, and they are in disbelief at how open the club are with not only those of us kind of on the inner circle with a bit more access, but with just fans in general. I mean, we have had those fan forums every year where anyone who's a member can come along and ask whatever question they would like. And it amazes me that people seem to still want more, because I think Rob and the current ownership group have been so upfront with the way they've made decisions. I mean, the number of years we saw that same pie chart about why games are going to Auckland, because that one game that we were having in Auckland paid for all of the losses on all of the home games. Yeah. We've seen that, and we've seen it time after time.
But the problem is you're talking about fans that won't necessarily have access to that forum. And also I don't think we are, though.
I think this is every fan member, and they've recorded them and released the videos. So it's been, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 fans have access to this. Admittedly, he hasn't been asked that question in a while, and I think it's made less and less sense, the answer, when we've only been getting 8,000 in Auckland. But this time, instead of taking 2 to Auckland when it failed last year, they did something different.
I know, but the part of the problem is that it's not just a question of taking it on the road, it's taking it to Sydney.
Yep.
And I think that's where you needed to kind of address the emotional component of it, of why the hell are you playing against Sydney in Sydney?
Which part of that didn't they do in their announcement, though? Like, that's the thing. I think they did do this. People just forgot.
Well, no, they said, you know, there's no venues available. The implication was that there was money or whatever. I think you've got to be way more explicit. And I do agree with you that the Wellness Group have been a lot more transparent than most of the other owners.
This is why I have the genuine question of, in what way should they be more explicit than there are no venues available, we're doing this because of the metrics and the money? What more could they have said, genuinely?
Well, I think they should be literally saying, you know, hey, we are basically, this is getting underwritten, and saying, if we take it,
I don't know that they'd be allowed to under the, if there was an underwriting deal, it would probably be prohibited under the terms for them to say that.
You reckon?
Not always.
Not always, but it might well have been.
Christchurch has been very much VBase was the promoter for it.
Yep.
Auckland, it's never really been explicitly stated that some of them have been Huawei, some of them have not been Huawei. That's all I know. I don't know who these other people are.
Yep.
But
they're commercial deals, though. Yeah. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if not disclosing the terms of the commercial deal is part of the deal. That's pretty normal.
And to be fair, in this case, the most likely underwriter is Southwest Sydney FC. And
Or the mayor's case, been pretty strong backing, sure. So he might well be council, maybe.
Under that case, you wouldn't want to explicitly state outwardly that you paid money to a team that's going to be competing with you.
It might well have clause in the contract, because exactly. They wouldn't want that either.
I see your point about being more explicit, but I think that they have, at the very least, tried to be 100% transparent. And perhaps sometimes they miss the mark slightly and not articulating something properly. That's the problem when you have two or three people who are making media statements, Mark Rudan being one of them in this case, that the message can get somewhat blurred. And the fact that there was a good 2.5 months between the announcement of this and the game, and potentially that message wasn't strong enough, but I think they have genuinely tried to not hide anything from the supporters about why they did this.
I would have bigger criticisms about the timing of that.
Sure.
Why was this not nailed down before the start of the season? Because arguably by the time they announced this, Rudan's point is much stronger.
Yeah.
Because we're actually partway through a season where we're doing all right.
But I don't think any of us believe that they organised this in 2 weeks in December. I think there was totally all the organisation.
But it is the second year in a row where we haven't got our shit together before the season started, and we've had to make late calls on where these games are going to be.
I think
there's some fair criticism in that, and particularly the transparency of why that's taking so long and being told to everyone so late. Yeah. That I would feel is okay. But I think their reasons for taking these games away have been communicated pretty clearly.
It's funny because I honestly can see exactly why that they didn't nail it down earlier, because they were hoping something else was going to come along.
Through. Yeah, I agree.
And I genuinely don't think there was any chance of anything else coming through.
That's why right at the top of the podcast, I said I have concerns about whether or not this actually was underwritten, because I think in the end, this ended up being a fairly last-minute deal. which is why I go, the number, like if the numbers had been there and it had made perfect financial sense, we would have had this organized before the season started. I think the offer was subpar to what they wanted, and that's why it was a bit late. And that's why I wonder if we have taken a hit on this.
Yeah, I
don't know that. I have no idea.
Yeah. Sorry to cut you off, Rosie, but I think I will get us moving along. But I think in hindsight, the Phoenix probably aren't going to do this again. They probably learned that this doesn't work. It's better to try two games in Auckland, one at QBE, for example.
Just play devil's advocate, though. Like, you might have thought the same after the last two games in Auckland last season. You might have thought they've learned. Don't take them there anymore. It's done.
But to be fair,
but instead, we go back and it's 23,000. Maybe they do go back to Australia. And I don't think you go to the enemy city. But maybe you go to a Canberra. No, or
they did specifically change the venue. They went, QBE does not work for us.
I think that was more about Eden Park offering them a deal than anything, though.
Eden Park would have been fairly aggressive.
It was also about QBE not potentially following through on contracts that have been signed, but that's another thing entirely. So,
Not having grass.
Not having grass, that's a fair point. Yeah. Let's move on to the rest of the round. I have no idea what happened, and I got so caught up in that discussion that I didn't look it up on my phone. I'm going to get there quickly.
I reckon people probably played football.
Here we go.
There was a lot of football.
Brisbane Roar, 5-3 of the Central Coast Mariners. That's the first time we've ever had a 5-3 in the A-League.
It's a five odd factoid.
Yeah, there you go. Look at that. Learn that on Phoenix City.
Oh.
Mountain Victory had a one.
No.
Okay,
no, no.
Sorry. Go back. 5-3, Brisbane Roar of the Central Coast Mariners.
Yes, you've missed out a couple of valuable statistics.
Okay,
there.
Tell me.
Red cards.
Oh, Matt Simon?
Oh, get there. There's a red card before that, though, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was, yeah.
And then the Matt Simon, a quote to rival his other quote.
His other quote being, "This is Australia."
This is Australia, your dog.
Yeah,
he did call the ref your fucking dog while charging at him.
So I didn't see this game, but I saw some tasty gifts that I enjoyed a lot. And I was like, from the video snippet I've seen, it appears that he's saying that to the ref. So this was at the ref.
He was chasing after the ref.
That's
pointing
amazing.
At him.
I decided that couldn't be the case. That it must be like someone who's on the other side of the ref, out of frame.
No, the ref's like, walking off.
So have they punished him for this?
Yeah.
Because that's unbelievable.
He's been cited.
The ref's turned, given him the card, turned and walked away, and he's gone after him, pointing and doing his Matt Simon.
Come back here, you effing dog, I believe is the...
It was a something, you fucking dog.
That is accurate, yep. Let's get back here, you effing dog, yeah.
And one of his players has basically grabbed him and had to turn him around and say, dude, but obviously not quick enough. But yes, that Matt Simon being Matt Simon.
What was the card even for? Was it a straight red?
Bad challenge. Second yellow. He should have been off early in the game. I think it was at the first red card where he had an absolute tirade at the referee, and he should have been off for a second yellow for that.
Just because I enjoy it. It was only last week, right, that the club were pushing it. Isn't he a lovely guy? He gave his shirt to someone thing, and everyone's like, well, it's nice. Lots of players give out shirts to people.
But also there's lots of players who don't abuse every single other person on the football field when they play football.
Yeah.
So
amazing.
He gave away one of his 200 shirts. It's like, whoopty.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nice. Like, I'm not going to bag him for that, but it certainly doesn't counter a lot of the other unlikable elements of the man.
You mean being Matt Simon?
Yes. Melbourne Victory had a 1-1 draw with Melbourne City. Costa getting a goal there to cancel out Jamie McLaren's penalty. Was that Jamie McLaren's first game for Melbourne City?
No, he's played three. Okay. He scored three.
Newcastle Jets had a 4-0 draw with the Adelaide United.
That's a good result. Considering that they came back from...
It's good for us.
It's also good for them, for Melbourne, considering... not Melbourne, but the Jets, considering they've been playing Asian. And getting smashed.
Yeah. And the Wanderers managed to pull off a 1-1 draw with Perth Glory in their final game at Spotless Stadium. A 95th-minute Tarek Alarich equaliser, getting them a point there. This weekend, or is it international break this weekend?
It's international break.
Oh, cool. Well, that's the end of the podcast. We'll do next round next week.
Yeah, because the All Whites don't actually play football.
Let's talk about that. It turns out that the New Zealand football had been offered a place in the Malaysian Cup or whatever it is, a four-way tournament in Malaysia, and turned it down because it would,
It was a player welfare issue they cited, which someone can explain to me because that would be ideal. Like, I read the story and I was like, I still don't understand where the player welfare concern is.
Can we not play other players like we always do?
it was too many games and not enough rest days. And I'm like, we have to play OFC Nations Cups where we have 2 days rest in between games. Wouldn't this be a great chance to practice at that?
Why not call up a bigger squad and rotate them?
Well, no, the squad problems you get FIFA'd into a certain squad size being allowed. But
you can certainly pull up 20 players and rotate the bejesus out of them.
So I suspect there probably are in the player contracts some welfare clauses. I wonder if there are exceptions made for FIFA tournaments.
Yeah, maybe.
Rather than friendlies that we've essentially decided terms on. Obviously, we haven't, but, you know, if that is written into the contract of, well, if you have to play two games in 2 days and it's a World Cup final, too bad. Yeah. Suck it up.
Yeah.
You know, that would seem a fair exemption to exist in the contracts.
The bigger problem is potentially that politically within New Zealand football is that it clashes directly with the Handy Prem semi-finals. And a good case for this Handy Prem at the moment is that quite a lot of the All-Whites squad would come from the Handy Prem and from certain teams and not other certain teams. I mean, Auckland would have a couple that go. Eastern Suburbs, you think, would have a few locked in. Tito's maybe not so much now that Gold is gone, but certainly you're taking the best players in the league out of the best teams in the league and the semi-finals. It makes zero sense to do that. Why they scheduled the semifinals during a FIFA international window to begin with is just ridiculous.
It's not ideal. But I think if, because the announcement of this tournament having agreed terms actually occurred quite a while ago. And we haven't made any announcement. And it was because they were waiting final confirmation. Clearly, we started having some misgivings about it for a while now. I do wonder if this was an absolute lock and there were no misgivings when this was all announced a month or two ago, we would have made movements to move those semifinals. But instead, we didn't because we were never going, basically.
Oh, well, yeah. My thinking is that it was all locked up and then someone went, oh, shit, the semifinals are on.
Maybe
left hand, right hand, not knowing, you know, which fax machine is on the right.
I think so that I can't remember the terms they used, but it was something like there's an expression of interest, which we had responded to and expressed interest. And then we hadn't signed up the final confirmation, which I would suspect someone got the details through. And that's when the player welfare, if it's the rest days and there is something explicit in contracts around that, that would have been realized at that point of, oh, this doesn't seem quite right. And as soon as we started having those concerns, we would have gone, okay, we don't need to get on the track of moving stuff because of this. Because I don't normally give New Zealand football credit, but I think if this tournament was happening and we were going, we probably would have moved some of those games.
Yeah, and it would have
been, if not moved the whole round.
We wouldn't have been calling up your Chris Woods, your Ryan Thomases. It would have been the B tier, so to speak, which would contain a lot of the Handy Prem players to fill out that squad. And so I think, from a lot of ways, it makes sense to not go to the tournament. The fact that there's probably not going to be a game until November now is the Island game when that's scheduled for is a little concerning, but you'd hope that they would use the June window, for example, to at least try for something. So
you'd hope so, but I mean, I think it's the Stuff reporters have been talking up. This will mean 500 days without the All Whites playing a game potentially.
That's normal.
That's insane, though.
That's ridiculous.
That shouldn't be normal.
Well,
that is a problem that we as a football nation need to rectify. We can't be going 500 days between friendlies.
I find it interesting. I find it interesting that friend of the worst game of all time, Andrew Vorman, probably not a friend of Phoenix City, but friend of the worst game, Andrew Vorman, 500 days ago said if the Always were clever, wouldn't schedule games in the first year, save the money for the closer to the time. And now the narrative is it's been 500 days. That's a bad thing. It's just like,
so there's a big difference between the first year and the second year as well, which is what you're talking about.
I guess this is the second year, right?
Yeah. Now's when we should be having games.
I mean,
not having anything last year, not such a problem. But now we're getting to the point where we do need to be having some games.
Nations Cup is June next year, so
And I think it's entirely understandable if we're not playing tournaments, if we just sneak in a couple of friendlies, and I'm entirely comfortable with those games being primarily New Zealand-based players going and not calling in your Chris Woods and stuff for all of those friendlies. But the squad needs to be getting together with the coach and doing stuff. Yeah.
June and September windows aren't off the cards yet. There's just nothing locked in yet.
Yeah.
But we've got a coach there and, you know, he's not going to get to see any players play.
Well, it's ridiculous. He has seen the players play. He very much has seen the players play.
Not for the All Whites, he's not.
No, true. But, yeah.
Yeah, he wants to be able to go, look, I want you to do this. You show me what you can do. He needs to be able to see if they're going to be able to play the way he wants them to play. This is ridiculous.
6 months of prep with two windows before the Nations Cup is not enough. You can't go November, March next year and expect to be able to go to the islands and play and win it and not make it look like Hudson did.
Yeah.
He's not even going to know who he's going to be able to pick because he won't have had enough time to look through his options.
One of the criticisms of Hudson was that he played 53 different All-Whites before he settled on the first 11. But at least he had time and games to play 53 All-Whites and work out who he wanted. And that team that we ended up for the Peru game with was pretty good. Like, the team that he assembled and the players that he had assembled was fine in the end, despite having used so many players to get there. He settled on the ones that worked for him. And some of those we didn't know were going to be those players from the start. So,
Oh, the glory days.
The glory days of Hudson. Hey, at least Fritz Schmidt isn't in the media saying that's actually a good thing that we have no games because blah, 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 which Hudson absolutely would have been doing. We all know that he would have been spinning it to suit himself.
And we run the very real risk of Hudson swooping in and taking a few of them for the Colorado Rapids too.
Well, the MLS has to adhere to the windows in terms of releasing players. They just don't stop for them. It's like the old A-League. So, how weird is it that the Phoenix have played no games in internationals windows this year, but the All Whites have not gone anywhere? It's just been extra long training weeks.
Yeah.
The 1 year, the first year that we get it breaks in the A-League and there's no effect anyway. It's just... Well, that's weird.
For us.
Yeah, for us. Yeah. And for Melbourne Victory, because Costa didn't go anywhere. That'll do for this week, I think. We have our Handy Prem. I've said that'll do twice. Handy Prem.
I haven't seen
Champions League. Champions League TWO have had 2 wins out of 2. A 2-0 win first up, and then a 13-0 win over Kiwi FC.
First one was over Bar.
And that's a good result over Bar, actually.
Yeah, it's not bad. Kiwi were ridiculous. They only took 14 players over there and they're missing half their first squad anyway.
Wow, impressive. 13-0 was, at the time, the biggest win in the Champions League ever for any team. But Auckland City have today smashed that by winning 15-0. So over... I can't remember. Anyway. Previous record was 11-0 for tie between Auckland and Wellington. So the third game of both teams coming up this weekend. 11-0, yeah.
Between Auckland and Wellington?
No, but both teams had got 11-0 wins.
Oh. Yeah. you said it was a tie between those two teams.
It was a...
oh, right. It was a...
My statement was factually correct. The biggest win is a tie between Auckland City and Team Wellington, who have and it was 11-0 is the biggest win. But I can see where the confusion came from. Let's end there. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week, maybe with Cam, maybe not. Who knows? You have to listen.
Where is Cam?
I have no idea where Cam is.
It's because I outed him as running a white slave ring out of Manawatu.
Okay. Well,
I think that's probably ending up on the editing room floor.
Yeah. I don't think that's true.
Prove it. Fake news.
Allegedly.
So I'm not going to promise that Cam will be here next week, but he might be. So tune in, see what happens then. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.